The new novel, The Truest Pleasure, is about a family divided by religion, a division between the Baptist Church and revival meetings, between a somber service and a service in which the people are so overcome by the Spirit they speak in tongues. The novel is set at the turn of the century in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, where the author Robert Morgan grew up. Robert Morgan now lives in upstate New York, where he's a professor at Cornell University. The Truest Pleasure is about the marriage between Ginny, who expresses herself most deeply at revival meetings, and Tom, who finds revival meetings embarrassing, a place where people make fools of themselves. Ginny has stayed away from the revival since she married Tom, but in this excerpt, read by Robert Morgan, she's convinced her husband to come with her to a revival, and when the preacher speaks, she feels he is speaking directly to her.
The Lord says somebody here tonight has stayed away from the Spirit too long and has been lukewarm, and she must rededicate her life or find the Spirit has turned away. Preacher Jarvis looked straight at me, and I knowed it was me that was meant. I felt like I was naked and my bones was bleaching in his glare. My dirty, sinful heart was visible to all. A pain went through me, and it was like my heart was tearing my chest. I had to move to get rid of the burden. I couldn't stand my blackness any longer. I saw that I had been away from communion with the Spirit. I'd tried to trade marriage and human things and reading and even hard work for the business of praise. I'd ignored what was best about myself, most satisfying. I'd lost something, and I had to get it back. I had to let go of myself to save myself. Still holding little Jewel to my chest, I began to shout, and I moved among the crowd, saying, "Jesus, I give you my life. Take it. It's yours." I guess I did a kind of dance, swaying among the people. I didn't notice I had moved across the sawdust to the front, still holding the baby. Jewel had woke up and screamed, but I hardly noticed. Milk come out of my breast and soaked down the front of my dress, but I didn't pay it any attention. It was only when I got to the front of the tent and turned that I saw how Tom looked at me. I was feeling the sweet inner burning of the Spirit. I felt I was floating up above my life. But Tom looked shocked and scared. He come forward and took Jewel and jerked me by the wrist out of the tent into the dark.
Robert Morgan, thank you for reading that excerpt of your new novel, The Truest Pleasure. The rift in this marriage between, the wife who wants to seek redemption in Pentecostal meetings by giving herself over, and the husband who is very distrustful of this, that split parallels a division in your family, in your grandparents' family, over different forms of baptism.
Right. It's actually a split in the whole community I grew up in. I grew up in Green River in western North Carolina, and there was a split in the church and in the community going back into the 19th century, mostly having to do with just that, the conservative hard-shell Baptist who wanted traditional services and the Pentecostal holiness people who wanted more emotional services with shouting and speaking in tongues and that sort of thing. And it came right down into my time in the 1940s and 50s.
What, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the differences between the two, were they both Baptist churches?
Well, the Pentecostal Holiness Church got started around the turn of the century, but it was based on holiness kind of religion that had been around a long time. In fact, I think in my community it went all the way back to Wales, to what was called the chapel ecstasy in the Welsh religion. But there are theological differences between the Pentecostal Holiness and the Southern Baptist. An example of the kind of theological arguments I heard as a child between my grandfather, who was a Baptist, and my father, who leaned toward the Pentecostal Holiness, had to do with falling from grace. The Baptist believed that once you were baptized and joined the church, you were saved forever, in effect. And the Pentecostal Holiness believed you could backslide and not get into heaven unless you had had the baptism of fire. And that's a very important point of difference. And this comes up in the story that Ginny has the baptism of fire.
What is the baptism of fire?
Well, it's some special sanctification that that people can get through the experience of a service. It's revealed through things like speaking in tongues and shouting. it shows that you have some special blessing. And this was the point of argument that came up most in discussions when I was growing up.
Did your father go through a baptism of fire?
He did, and he often spoke in tongues and shouted at meetings. And of course, the Baptists disapproved of that. They thought that was shameful behavior.
Did you attend both churches, the Southern Baptist and the Pentecostal Holiness?
I did. I attended the Baptist church regularly, Green River Baptist Church, and also camp meetings and revival meetings where these other things took place.
What was it like the first time you saw your father speaking in tongues?
Oh, it was terrifying. I was not able to write about that sort of experience really until I was almost 40, when I wrote a poem about seeing my father speak in tongues for the first time. I went off to college, of course, and took psychology and discovered there was something called glossolalia, and there were psychological explanations for the phenomenon of speaking in tongues, but it still scared me, I think, to talk about it. And finally, about 1984, I wrote a poem called The Gift of Tongues. And it was after I wrote that poem I realized one reason why it might have been so scary to me to see this kind of thing and hear it. I was sensitive to language even then, and it was language out of control. It was a purely spontaneous language. And writers want spontaneity and inspiration, but they also want control over language. They have to have that at the same time.
It's also language without narrative meaning.
Well, sometimes it's supposed to be interpreted by somebody else at the service. That's one of the ideas, that there is a particular receiver there in the service who can get up and translate for everybody else what this message is.
So would you be willing to describe what you experienced watching your father speak in tongues?
Well, it was electrifying. I can remember just feeling frozen almost. I'd never heard anything like that. And I felt as though I was in touch with something very different from any other experience of language I'd ever had.
Did you feel like suddenly he was not somebody you knew? That he was possessed by another force that made him different?
Exactly. It was a voice I had never heard before from him, but at the same time, I felt as though I recognized that something way deep in memory was connecting with that, that this was a new level of experience.
Now, did you want to be carried away by the Spirit like that, too?
I think I was both attracted and repelled. In fact, the poem I wrote about this experience ends with me going up on the mountain and clenching my teeth and enjoying the gift of silence, I called it. To show control, that I could resist it. And I think I made up my mind even then that I somehow wanted to stay away from that sort of experience, and I wanted to find a freedom out of that sort of intense religious experience. I can remember, even as a child, how good I felt going out of the church and listening to the wind and the pines outside and seeing the stars overhead. How peaceful nature seemed in contrast to the theology, the threats of damnation and hellfire and that sort of thing in the church.
I want to get back to your novel, The Truest Pleasure. The novel set at the turn of the century in the Blue Ridge Mountains where you grew up. Did you learn a lot about yourself and about your family by writing this novel?
It enabled me to go back and to remember things I hadn't for a long time. I was lucky to grow up in a family of storytellers, people who were interested in history and in the history of the community and the family. And as I began to write fiction, I realized I had all these stories that I could develop, go into. And yes, the act of writing is an act of discovery. Often of things you didn't know you knew, things you had forgotten. And this particular story, The Truest Pleasure, let me go back and recover a lot of things I had forgotten about revival meetings, even about farming. There's a lot of details about farming, about the social life of the family and the community.
One of the things I found interesting in the novel, the woman in the novel, when she's in her late 30s, is thinking about what a pleasure lovemaking is and what a truly transcendent experience that is. And she thinks to herself, who would have dreamed that a middle-aged woman could feel this way? And I think being in her 30s was much older then than it would be now.
I believe that's right. A woman in 1910 who was 39 was thought of as a pretty old person. And she's remembering how she felt when she was a kid. She would never have dreamed that a woman that old would enjoy lovemaking so much. But her marriage is very intense in that way. They're very very much attracted to each other, she and Tom. And except for this difference over religion, they're very close. One of the pleasures of writing this book was to try to get into the mind of a woman in that period, to get the voice right, and to try to imagine how she would see things and how she would talk about it.
What did you do to imagine how she would see her own sexuality?
Well, I think that writing across gender that way puts a writer, a male writer, on his honor to do a little bit better job, to become a little bit better writer than you would be otherwise. This is the third story I've told from the point of view of a woman, and I discovered that once you get the voice talking, it's almost as though it writes the story for you. And you do write down things you didn't know that you knew. So the key to it is getting the voice. Once you hear that, you can go ahead with it and let the character tell the story and come up with the insights that you simply didn't know about, you didn't know you had.
It seems to me the main character in your novel has been brought up in a fairly sexually repressed way. She doesn't think that a woman should really express herself freely in that matter. And yet her spiritual expression is so free. So it's a period where it's an interesting mix of repression and abandon.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the religious experience may have been a way of breaking through that repression for her. That's the way I see her. That she had experienced this ecstasy in the brush arbors, in the meetings, and that perhaps enables her to be so intense in her sexual life also.
I imagine growing up in your family, especially with your father going to revival meetings and, you know, being overcome by the Spirit and speaking in tongues, that you grew up with this idea that there's a way of getting close to God, that there's a way of being kind of overcome by this spiritual presence. No, you are no longer a church-going person. Do you get that sense of transcendence from something else?
Oh, I think so. I think that one of the things I learned as a child was that the spiritual is very important and is always there. And whether you're in church or out of it or in a denomination or out of it, it doesn't matter. Many of the most spiritual people I know have nothing to do with organized religion. But I don't think I've ever lost the sense of the importance of the spiritual and how much it defines people. People really wouldn't be themselves without it.
What does the spiritual mean to you without the framework of an organized religion?
Well, it means many things. It is awakened by the experience of nature or other people or language, reading, by music. It is the experience that reminds us we're more than just material, that there's a way in which, as the word means, transcendental, that we're not just chemistry and physics and biology, but something else.
When you were writing The Truest Pleasure, you had to imagine what it must feel like to be possessed by the Holy Spirit, to give yourself over to that completely. Can you imagine what it's like, and is it something that you wish that you had experienced at least once in your life, just to feel it, to know it?
Oh, yeah, I think I'm hungry for all experience. That doesn't mean I will try anything, but no, I want very much to know how people feel and how they see things, and to know extreme experience as well as the more ordinary ones. I believe there's a story that somebody once saw Henry James at a murder trial in rural England, and they said, what in the world are you doing here? And he said something like, well, wherever there's passion, there I'm going to be. I feel the same way. I want to know how other people feel and experience things. One of the pleasures of writing fiction really is to escape yourself and try to get into somebody else's head and to see how they see the world. It's not unlike acting, I believe, that it's not just to express yourself, but to try to imagine how other people would express themselves.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, it's been a pleasure.
Robert Morgan's new novel is called The Truest Pleasure. He's a professor of English at Cornell University. This is Fresh Air.